Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mind on Mental Health podcast. My name is Andy Dean. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and today I'm speaking with Eileen Rodriguez. Eileen is a senior admissions clinician at Penn Medicine Princeton House Behavioral Health and has worked in our admissions department for 24 years. I wanted to speak with Eileen because we realize at Princeton House that deciding to make the call for help is a big step and can really be daunting. So we wanted to give you an idea of what to expect should you need to make that phone call. Additionally, I wanted to pick Eileen's brain about any tips she might have for people in terms of how to communicate with someone when they are in crisis. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode and find it helpful. All right, Eileen. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Andy.
I'm super happy to have you here. So the first thing I like to do is just have whoever I'm interviewing tell the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do for the system, et cetera.
Sure. So I've been with Princeton House in general for almost 24 years, and I've always worked in an admissions type setting. At this time, my title is Senior Admissions Clinician, and my role in the office is just the same as any of the other clinicians. We are receiving clinical either through a phone conversation or via fax to screen to see if any of these potential patients are meeting criteria for any of our services. So anyone in our department is trained clinically to take this information to identify if they're a good fit. And if not, we can refer out.
Awesome. How many years did you say?
Almost 24.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really long time.
It is, but it's been very rewarding. I haven't been in the same department. I've been, again, in an admissions type setting, but I started off with our inpatient, and then I've had a couple different roles in our outpatient department as well. But I've been doing this specific role since 2012 when our admissions departments centralized.
Gotcha. I guess, for purposes of what we're going to wind up talking about today, about how many people would you say you talk to a day?
Oh, gosh. So I've had as high as a little over 30 calls a day.
Oh, wow.
Those are unusual.
Uh-huh.
But on average, maybe around like 15 to 18 calls a day.
Okay. And I guess just for context, can you tell people when you're taking a call what that tends to look like or what people tend to be struggling with when they're calling us?
Sure. So again, that could vary as well. We speak to all different types of clients, whether it be the clients themselves or different referral sources, family members, etc. So we have to know going into the call, we never know what we're going to get in regards to temperament, mood, information needed, etc. So we go into it praying for the best, knowing that it's possibly the worst. But our goal is the same. We want to make every caller comfortable.
Mm.
We want them to know that we are in their corner. We want to help them as best as we possibly can, regardless if we're able to keep them within our system or if we're referring them out.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask a lot of the same information when we get these calls, generalities about the program, any questions that they may have, and just keeping them abreast of what this process looks like so they're not in the dark. We tell them how long this phone call is going to take, what we're looking to have, like information-wise from them, so we can, again, do best by them.
Mm-hmm.
So we give them step-by-step of what to expect from the call itself, what we're going to be asking of them. We try to keep everything as general as possible, as we definitely understand this is such a hard phone call, whether it be the patient's family, etc. So we want to know, or we want them to know, that we're trying to keep it as general and least triggering as possible.
Mm-hmm. So my thought process is, like, you're talking to sometimes 30 people a day when they're at a point in their lives where they're reaching out for a higher level of care for mental mm-hmm. health or substance use treatment. So you're somebody who's had a lot of practice having these conversations with patients, with people that are calling for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to talk about, like, what are some ways that maybe we can take some of the skills that you've learned in terms of how you do this for a living, and maybe we can translate that for friends or family members of someone who's struggling with mental health or substance use issues. So one of the things I heard you say is you really want to try to make people feel as comfortable as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you do that? Like, what do you do that makes them feel comfortable?
So what I like to do and what I've grown into doing is, yes, I have a job at hand, but I don't want the callers just to think that I'm reading from a script or sounding very robotic. So I try to have that fine balance of being professional but yet personal. Mm-hmm. I am not just an employee here. I'm also have other parts of my life. I'm a daughter. I'm a parent. I'm a wife. I've myself had, I'm sure, issues or things happen to me. So I really keep that in mind and know that I want to be treated as a consumer well. So why wouldn't I do that the same way for the caller? Mm-hmm. So it starts off with how I answer the phone. I'm not sounding upset or angry or sad. I'm answering it very, professionally. And I want to sound like someone that someone wants to give their information to. Mm-hmm. I really help them step by step, answering their questions, going over our services, really helping them understand. And I don't care how many questions they have. And they're like, I know it's a lot I'm asking of you. And I'm like, absolutely not. Mm. I would want someone to treat me the same way. This is a huge step. And there's a lot of validation going on in these phone calls as well. Mm. So whether it be helping them with the generalities of the program, or when we're in the nitty gritty of asking some really personal clinical questions, I want to make sure that they're comfortable. If they're appearing upset, I want to, I want them to know that I'm hearing that. Do you need to take a moment? If they're getting angry with me, I don't raise my voice. I keep it very professional, very even, and say, I'm sure this is not easy for you. I hear that you're very upset. Using a lot of those I statements. I don't want anyone to be on the defense as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Does that always work? No. Mm-hmm. But that's just the nature of what we're dealing with. Someone just could just be upset in general. It could be part of their makeup of their disorder. You have to always keep that in mind. I always keep that in mind.
So again, taking your job that you do for us every day out of it. Mm-hmm. If a family member was to come to you and say, like, hey, you have to talk to people like this all the time. I'm concerned about my son, or I'm concerned about my wife or husband. It sounds like one of the things you would recommend is like using I statements. What other skills do you think could translate over to like a family member?
I know it sounds very simple, but listening is a huge piece. So when, say, I'm personally on a call and someone has a lot to say, I will definitely hear them out. Mm. But then there's also having someone to the point where they're not allowing you to interject. So there's definitely, again, a fine line of listening, but then that person allowing you to give their feedback, their insight, this is what I'm hearing, just to make sure I have an understanding. Mm-hmm. And it is very difficult. Of course, where do you find is an appropriate place to intervene,
right?
Because you, again, don't want to upset that caller. They're obviously calling for help, whether it be, again, the patients themselves or a friend or a family member. But hearing the situation, and as an admissions clinician, there's only a certain level of what I'm able to provide. If someone's calling and saying any suggestions on how to do like an intervention, that's right. Way beyond me.
You said listening, which you said like sounds simple. 99% of things in the mental health world sound simple, and they are simple, but they're not easy. So just making sure that the person knows that you're listening to them, I think, is key, whether you're doing it professionally or, you're a concerned friend or family member.
Yes.
So I guess if we dive into that a little bit more, like, how do you let them know that you're truly listening to them when they're calling?
I mean, it's just simple skills of conversation, having that dialogue back and forth. At the same time, I don't want them to feel that either myself or a colleague are, you know, judging them. This is not, and I, it's funny that I say that because I constantly say to them, this is a judge-free zone.
Right.
Where so many times they're like, please, you know, don't think this way about me or that way about me. And I'm like, no, judge-free. Because I want them to feel comfortable. As much information that they are comfortable giving me, the best outcome that I could give to them. It's not comfortable providing information to someone that they've never met, someone that they're not even seeing. But I want to provide that environment for them to clinically give as much to me as possible in regards to their symptoms, their history, their experiences, so then I could then move forward with my recommendation.
Yeah, I think no matter what your role is or what kind of relationship we're talking about, the best way to shut down any kind of communication or any listening on the other party's part is to make them feel judged.
Right.
So, like I heard you saying, just making sure that you tell them it's a judgment-free zone. And, you know, as a client, it's obviously super uncomfortable to be calling somebody and telling somebody some of the most personal issues that you might be having. And there can sometimes be a lot of shame surrounding that. So,
yeah. And so many times, Andy, I feel so blessed when someone tells me, you know, this is the first time I've ever shared that with anyone, and they've been in treatment for years. So there's must be something about that conversation that allowed them to give that information, which touches me in many different ways, but then also professionally allows me to, again, provide appropriate level of care and treatment information.
Sure.
A recommendation. So it's very rewarding in that sense that someone is entrusting me, a voice on the other line, with such personal information.
100% know what you're talking about, because I feel the same way as a clinician.
Yeah, it's why we got into this.
Yeah, it's. I remember when I first started doing it, it was like I felt that it was truly like an honor and a blessing. And now I've been doing it for 12 years.
It's a long time.
And I still have, I honestly still get that feeling where I just feel like, you know, it's a privilege for people to share stuff like that with you.
Yeah. And it may be every 10 phone calls or so that you get that compliment. But even if it doesn't go as far as that, when you end a conversation and someone says to you, you've been very helpful, I appreciate you, thank you for listening. Etc. That's why I do what I do.
So, okay. So using I statements, making sure people know that you're listening, I think by using like reflective listening, making sure that people know that they're not, or hopefully making people feel like they don't feel like they're being judged when they call.
Yes.
I guess I'm wondering, like, is there something, if we change sort of the picture clinically, we say somebody's calling and they're really, really despondent, like, do you change the way that you approach that phone call?
You have to tackle every phone call with understanding and patience. Some calls are very easy and some are not very easy.
Yeah.
So I really try to keep my tone even, just to kind of keep it as even as possible, having them know that you're on their side, whether they want to believe it or not. Keeping that tone is so key.
So like reiterating that you're on the same team, kind of.
Yes. Like we all want the same outcome.
Right. Okay, Eileen. Hey, thank you so much for coming on. And more to come from Eileen Rodriguez, people. You'll see.
Thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay.